Hello, welcome to Series 6, Episode 5 of the Prompted by Nature podcast. I'm your host, Helen, and I hope you're doing well. So this is the final episode for some time. I've made the difficult decision to put the podcast on what I'm calling indefinite sabbatical, in inverted commas, so I can be more present and consistent with my writing and different aspects of my creativity. I've called it indefinite sabbatical because I'm very prone to changing my mind, and I didn't want it to be like, this is the end forever, but it might be the end forever. It's just that there may be things that come up that I think, oh, that would be good. So I'm calling it indefinite sabbatical because that kind of makes sense for where I am in terms of focusing more on my writing. And I'm going to be developing my Substack newsletter, which you'll hear about more, hopefully. I do have a short solo episode coming up to talk about it all, but you can get all the updates on the Substack. Just search Prompted by Nature on the app or the website. But that aside, let's talk about today's episode. So today I'm really happy to be sharing my conversation with the completely amazing Lucy Powers from Rowan Bank Environmental Arts and Education. This is a conversation we actually had before the summer, but with the summer holidays taking me away from anything other than like looking after the kids and all of that sort of stuff, it kind of fell by the wayside. But I'm really, really happy to be releasing it now as it's full of hope and creativity. And really what Lucy does is the embodiment of everything that Prompted by Nature is and why I set up this podcast. She's creative and she's using that creativity to really inspire people about nature and the climate emergency, and it's just incredible. I actually found Lucy through Parents for Future, which I've mentioned before. She was on a call a really long time ago, and actually I think it might have been, we did a book club call a couple of years ago, and it was with Harriet Sugarman, who wrote How to Talk to Your Kids About Climate Change. And I'm pretty sure Lucy was on the call and she talked about what she did. And even then I was like, right, I need to have her on the podcast. And it never happened. And then this year I was like, right, I need to get her on. If I'm going to finish, she has to be on. And we kind of scheduled it and rescheduled it. And yeah, but we finally got a time to chat, and I'm just so, so happy that we did. Lucy is the director of Rowan Bank, which is an environmental arts and education CIC, and is a social enterprise which combines science with the arts to bring people together to enjoy and learn how to better care for their environment. They engage people in an imaginative and inclusive way, helping them to connect with and experience the magic of nature. Lucy is a climate ambassador with Climate Outreach and has been awarded a Churchill Fellowship, which she talks about in the conversation, in creative climate communication and education. Lucy is a qualified forest school leader and an Eco Homes and Bream assessor. She's also an aerial performer and teacher for All or Nothing Aerial Dance Theatre and Dance Space, Scotland's National Centre for Dance. Lucy's worked successfully with schools, community organisations, government agencies and the private sector. In this conversation, we discuss what Rowan Bank is and how it came about, how Rowan Bank merges art and science to make environmental education more accessible and exciting, the natural flight of steps and the part it plays in Rowan Bank's work, the importance of carbon literacy and finding a variety of ways to teach this, Rowan Bank's commitment to sustainable transport, Rowan Bank's collaborative approach to creating stories, sustainable costume design, the advice she would give to her younger self, and what she has coming up that she's looking forward to. You can find Lucy on her website, www.rowanbank.org.uk, and on social media, on Instagram, at rowanbank_environmental_arts. And episodes that would go really well with this one are Series 1, Episode 13A, Dawn Nelson, Rewilding the Self Through Storytelling. Series 5, Episode 6A, Angeline Morrison, Folk Music as Storytelling. And then another one from Series 5, Episode 10A, Moya Lloyd, Building a Creative Community at the Boundary Way Project. As always, I'm on Instagram at prompted.by.nature, on my website, which needs updating, www.promptedbynature.co.uk, and on Substack, where you can become a free or paid subscriber and have so much coming up on Substack in the next few months. You can find it, as I said at the beginning, just by searching Prompted by Nature over there. I'll be back soon with the writing prompt that accompanies this episode, along with the solo episode to round things off nicely. But in the meantime, I'm sending you lots of love, happy listening, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
So I'm Lucy Power, and I'm co-director of Rowan Bank Environmental Arts and Education. And we're a small community interest company based in Edinburgh, Scotland.
Nice. So because obviously we in the podcast we talk about nature and creativity and all of that kind of stuff, I like to start by asking people, so what is nature doing around you at the moment? Because you're in Bonnie, Scotland, so it might be slightly different.
Well, it's raining. So we had all our sunshine before the summer holidays. So it's a bit rainy, it's a bit windy. A little bit chilly. It doesn't feel that summery. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be going to the beach today. So nature is doing what nature does in Scotland, which is all the weathers. In summertime.
Yeah.
It's very green, and right. That's great because it was very dry and we needed the rain. So Everything's gone green again. So that's lovely.
So I'd love to hear about your journey as a creative and how you sort of came to do what you do. Well, first of all, maybe I'll ask what Rowan Bank is, and then we'll kind of get into how it came about.
So Rowan Bank Environmental Arts and Education was set up to provide interactive and unique education experiences that were memorable. That was kind of what we set up in order to fill a gap. So I worked as an environmental consultant. My background is in environmental science.
Oh, wow.
My academic background. But performing arts was always my passion. And I suppose working as an environmental consultant showed me that sometimes reports and presentations on PowerPoint aren't always effective in motivating and moving people and getting messages across. And I wanted to fill a gap, and Rowan Bank was set up in order to try and make environmental education more accessible and more memorable and more exciting, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So that's where the performing arts come in. Obviously it was my passion and it was my hobby. So we combine like the arts with the science in order to try and communicate messages and inspire action.
And what sort of thing? So if I were to say, bring my kids along to one of your events or one of your activities, what sort of thing would it entail? Because I've looked on your website and, you know, I've sort of seen all of the really beautiful costumes and players and all of this sort of thing. What does it look like? What does it entail?
Yeah, so if you brought your kids along to one of our events, we do lots of different things, but one of the things that we love doing most is our promenade performances in forests. So we work a lot with nature agencies like the Woodland Trust and RSPB and Scottish Forestry and Scottish Wildlife Trust, and we will try to engage the local community around a nature reserve or a local woodland by putting on an event that's unusual, that you wouldn't normally find in a woodland in, say, Livingston. Mm. And you'd come along with your kids and you'd be met by a stilt-walking musician who would introduce themselves as a character that lived in the forest and take them on a journey, often like in the form of a treasure hunt through the forest. Where they'd meet different characters along the way. So they'd meet trapeze artists, musicians, storytellers, puppets. And through this walk in the woods and through this story, they would learn about something to do with the woodlands, something to do with the season and why you should celebrate it. And sometimes we'll be much more kind of focused on an issue like climate change or a local environmental issue, often the woodlands that we work in experience lots of antisocial behaviour and fly tipping and litter. So it will depend on the event what the environmental message is. But we call it a forest circus or a magical woodland walk. So they are our kind of forest shows that we do. Lots of them are just about nature connection and giving people a lovely time in their local environment. We talk about something called the natural flight of steps. So yeah. I'm a forest school leader as well as kind of a background in environmental science and the performing arts. So kind of lots of different backgrounds. But in my forest school training, I was lucky enough to do a 1 day Skogsmuller course, which is like the Swedish approach to forest school. Oh, wow. And during this course, they talked about something called the natural flight of steps. And I'll explain it, but it informs all of our work. I just thought it was such a great explanation and really useful when we run our teacher training programs, which is another thing that we do quite a lot. So if you imagine a child walking up a short flight of four steps, and the first step is enjoying nature, and the second step is maybe still enjoying nature, but maybe observing nature, like the changing of the seasons, or like what you asked me, what's happening in nature in Scotland at the moment, like which flowers are out at, or what's the weather doing? And then the third step is when you start caring for nature. And then the fourth step is perhaps, you know, taking it a step further and being actively involved in campaigning to look after the natural environment. Maybe joining Friends of the Earth or Greenpeace or going on climate marches or writing to your MPs. So I think so often in environmental education, we jump to that third step. We expect children to care for nature without ever having spent time on those first two steps of just enjoying and observing nature. And that's the foundation. And without those roots, it's just a concept that you should take care of nature. It's just something else that an adult's telling you to do. And without actually having a deep connection or understanding of why that's important. So we, through our forest walks and our forest circus, we spend a lot of time on those first two steps.
That's
really important.
And I feel like I've never thought about it in terms of four steps, but in my head, that's always what I've thought is like, no one's going to protect, because, you know, I have a community group and we're trying to protect a local green space. We do lots of activities in there. And when we started, I was just like, a lot of people don't even know this place is here. Mm. And why should they care about it? Why should they protect it when they don't even know it's here? They don't even know. And it makes, I feel like it just makes so much sense that you take and you just say, just enjoy this space, just enjoy what it is, enjoy being here.
Let's have a celebration here.
Yeah. And it applies to children and adults because, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I talked about children on those steps, but it totally applies to adults. It applies to everybody. And actually, you know, well, when I grew up, I played outside a lot. I grew up in London. So, you know, I wasn't surrounded by nature or anything, but, you know, there are little scraps. And I played outside a lot. And I think that makes a huge difference. But I think we have to assume that children don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of children don't do that anymore. And I think that's, we do a lot of work with schools, especially primary schools, doing creative outdoor learning programs and trying to empower teachers to take learning outside and why that's important. And I think if we go on the assumption that during school time is when you need to do it, just like during school time, you need to kind of help share the love of reading with children, because you can't assume that that happens at home. Mm-hmm. I think you also can't assume that being outdoors and the love of nature and a connection with nature happens at home. I think you sadly also can't assume that healthy eating happens at home or, you know, good patterns of, you know, healthcare generally. And I think therefore schools have an obligation to provide those kind of core things that are so important for humans. Without, you know, we're part of nature and we forget that. And without remembering that, we're very lost, as well as being an environmental catastrophe. I think we're lost as individuals as well.
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking as you were speaking as well, I went to a sustainability conference. It was an FE, because I'm in FE, sustainability conference. So it was very much about post-16. And colleges and that kind of thing. And I was thinking when you were talking about, you know, you do performing arts, but you've got a background in environmental science. Yesterday, a lot of what they were talking about, because I went to a session on carbon literacy, which I already am involved in, I market and all of that sort of stuff. But they kept talking about STEM subjects, and they kept talking about, you know, carbon literacy and how students in STEM subjects just kind of get it more than students in humanities do because of the numbers and the this and the that. And it just kept coming up that it was almost like not relevant to humanities subjects and that sort of thing. And I had to put my hand up at the end and say, like, actually, carbon literacy is important to all subjects, not just, and you know, they did talk about all of the other subjects. It was just that they kept almost like referring to humanities as something that didn't really need to talk about this, didn't really need to engage in the same way, I suppose, as STEM subjects. And I was like, actually, you know, we have eco-criticism, we have, you know, there are courses popping up all over the UK for environmental humanities, you know, environment and spirituality, and you've got Black Mountain College, and you've got all of these other, you know, schools and colleges and whatever popping up doing exactly that, combining the environment and environmental issues with humanities. And I just found it quite maddening.
Baffling, isn't it? And it's like, it's so important to, I hate this word when you're talking about this subject in a way, but like, it's so important for it to be cross-curricular, because it's part of everything we do. It's the survival of the human race. And how can that be pocketed into science or geography or, yeah. And I think about the things that have kind of really like moved me to kind of be inspired to just connect or really care. And sometimes it's poetry, isn't it? Or a photo or a painting. I mean, obviously I think like shows and theatre. And I think one of the things that really stuck with me as a child that probably influenced how I've taken the direction of Rowan Bank is I was in high school. I was maybe like 14 or 15. And a theatre company came to our school and did a show to the whole assembly. Like, I went to a big inner London state school. So there must have been like, you know, 800 of us in the audience or something. On AIDS, and it was like, I don't know how long the show was, but you know, less than an hour in our school hall, and it was so moving, and everybody was in tears and everybody was affected by it, like, but on a really quite profound level. It was like, you know, you can have all these like talks in sex education or in, you know, or in class, but it was just this really short, high impact show. And then I ended up taking, I was very lucky, I was in a school where I could take performing arts GCSE. And my kind of community project as part of that was to work with local primary schools. I was only 15 or 16, you know, really young, with a group of us, putting on a show with the kids. And I remember thinking, oh, this is what I want to do. And I didn't put the two and two together, like this really strong message of why safe sex is so important to this bunch of teenagers, to then like doing performing arts with school kids. But then when we, you know, set up Rowan Bank and started doing these shows, and I reckon most people that come to our shows just have a really nice time. You know, they just have a really lovely time, and they're in the woods, and it's something really unusual and fun. But every now and again, we'll get somebody where it really moves them, and that's the kind of impact that you want. You want to have a nice time, and have a nice time in nature and in their local wood or park or wherever we are, and that's so important. And then you've kind of done what your job is set out to do, and hopefully, you know, in these places where these local resources, whether it's a wood or a park or a beach, are neglected or underused or abused, it enables people to see it in a new light. And I think that's, oh wow, God, this is a lovely place. I never knew it was here. Like, I didn't know about this little corner. And normally it's like covered in, you know, burnt out mattresses.
Yeah.
See a really nice woodland. And I feel kind of safe bringing my kids here. But then every now and again, you get somebody that really gets the message. And you never know what the ripple effect of that will be. I suppose that's the kind of philosophy we work on. I don't think we've got a magic wand. But I think it's really important when you've got a crisis like the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis to not just approach it with one in one way with graphs and sites. I think the numbers are really important. I think carbon literacy is really important. It's really important that we understand the numbers, and but it doesn't work for anybody. Like, you know, 1.5 degrees and net zero, and it's just not, it's not very friendly.
No.
Most people, that doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
A walk in the woods and their children playing and really realizing why so much is at stake, why we need to protect what we've got and how linked we are to the natural environment. That makes much more sense to most people.
Yeah.
I think we have to speak in loads of different languages in order to get the message across. I don't think there's one approach.
Yeah, it's so true. And
I think the science is really important. And I suppose having that scientific understanding and that scientific background perhaps allows us the freedom to play with the creative ways to get messages across.
That's exactly what I was about to say. I remember we did a school trip a few weeks ago and there was a boy and we were talking about trees and I was saying, you know, because they were doing some net sweeping and stuff and we were in the woodland bit. And I said, you know, if the development happens, this woodland will be gone and it's really nice and da da da. And, you know, the trees recognize us and they know, you know, they know us and they talk to each other. And this boy went, trees can't talk. And I was like, well, not in the way that we talk, but they talk to each other. And we started talking about the roots and all the networks underneath and the fungus and all of this sort of thing. And it was really like we were just sort of telling a story. We were sort of saying, and there's these, and then this branches off, and then they start talking to each other. And if one of them's sick, and he came away and he was just like, I had no idea. And it's like, you know, this 8-year-old child going, oh my God. But we were using science to bring that to life for a child, but in a kind of more, you know, like you say, not the numbers and the, well, they did this experiment, which...
Yeah, you were actually there just telling a story about the trees that were there, right there.
Yeah.
I didn't think, because we do a, so as well as our kind of forest circus and magical woodland walks, which are really about nature connection and celebrating the seasons, we have a program called Positive Imaginings, which is a climate education program for primary school age children and their teachers. It's a teacher training program as well. So it includes a show, but there's workshops that we do with the children in the forest. And before and after the show, and we run a teacher training program, and that's much more focused on climate change and the science of climate change and why we need to do something about it urgently. But it's still a show and it's still about emotions, and the show follows the story of a character who is suffering from climate anxiety and how she feels and how a collaborative and a collective approach to the climate crisis is needed rather than an individualistic one, and how her friends, who are other characters in the show, but they're also the trees and the animals that live in the forest, can help her see things in a new way, have a different perspective about what we can do to help make the climate crisis less of a crisis. I mean, obviously, you know, climate change is happening, and we're going to, whatever we do, we're going to experience some level of climate change. We are experiencing already, but it's how to manage that. So you can, on our website, we've got a page for Positive Imaginings, and there's a little film of the show, and there's a film about how the show was made in collaboration with these children in Edinburgh in the run-up to COP26.
Oh, wow.
So what we wanted to do was gather what the children in this area of Edinburgh that's, it's a very low-income area, it has lots of problems associated with it, but it also has this incredible woodland, one of the nicest woods in Edinburgh. It does suffer from lots of antisocial behaviour, so it has all the kind of big problems that urban woodlands sometimes have. But it was about why that green space was important to these children, and as well as the climate crisis, linking that to their local area and what was important for them. And what they thought should be done, what were their positive imaginings. And the show was written based on the children's positive imaginings that we collected during the workshops.
Wow.
So it's quite an interesting approach. That might be something that your listeners would be interested in.
Yeah.
Touring the show by bike, which is a challenge because everybody's hilly.
Yes, very. It's probably like Brighton.
The idea is to kind of tour it wider, But we just, there was such a high demand for it in Edinburgh that we've just been in Edinburgh so far, and the council decided to take it on board and wanted every primary school to have access to it in Edinburgh.
That's
However,
amazing.
we're still struggling to secure the funding to enable that to happen because we've been subsidising it. Schools pay a small amount and the idea is it's funded the rest. So at the moment that's on hold. So if you have any magic wands in terms of funding, let us know. But we've just been booked to take it to the Isle of Mull.
Wow.
Coast of Scotland, to the primary schools. So there's, I think there's 7 primary schools on Mull and Iona. And there's lots of community woodlands on Mull. I don't think Iona really has woodlands. And we're trying to work out how we can get it there by bike and public transport.
Wow, that's an undertaking.
Quite exciting.
Is that a commitment that you made to do everything by
right,
bike?
It was right at the beginning of, so we have a sustainable transport policy. We really try to minimise kind of how much we use fossil fuel vehicles. We do own a van as an organisation because it's often our mobile dressing room. We're working in woodlands, we don't have any indoor space. And sometimes that's really crucial. But for Positive Imaginings, because when it was set up in the run-up to COP26, we knew that it would be in Edinburgh for now. And we decided that we would try and do it by bike and public transport. And walking, sustainable transport means. Yeah. And it was mainly by bike. Every now and again, I think we had somebody working with us that preferred to take the bus and walk. That's totally fine. Yeah. It wasn't like an add-on, and I think that really helped because we planned the whole production based around the bikes, and we also planned the woodlands that we would visit, like how do we get in via bike, and it made it in some ways much easier because often you're carrying stuff from the van into the wood. We had to think about things in different ways for sure, but it was great, the sense of satisfaction we got. And Sustrans helped fund it.
Oh, brilliant.
So they were like very excited. We had this show on a bike. And I think there's a little film up on the Sustrans website of us all cycling in our costumes. And again, that kind of sense of community.
Yeah.
If you're just in a van or something, you're just kind of sitting there until you get there and then it starts. Mm-hmm. Whereas as soon as we were on our bikes, we were together and trying to get up the hill with all the stuff.
Yeah, and also I feel like it reflects the kind of changes we're all going to have to make anyway, like everything in some way, you know, whether people like it or not, whether governments like it or not, if anything's going to happen, we have to make sometimes quite uncomfortable decisions about how far we can go and how much we can sort of spread ourselves.
Yeah, and like lots of people said, how can you put a whole show, we have a cargo bike, which obviously enables us to carry, like, you know, all the aerial rigging equipment and things because we put trapezes and trees.
Wow.
So it's quite heavy kit. And without the electric cargo bike, that I don't know, maybe some superhuman could do it. We could hire one of those people with amazing cycling legs. But what we have to remember is that we not only have to get there by bike, we then have to do shows all day. So that's very physical. But I really think that it did make it hard sometimes, especially if it was rainy or windy or cold, which it sometimes was all of those things.
Yeah.
But I think the opportunity and the benefits that came from it, and like all of our team said it, like it was an amazing sense of collective purpose and like we can do this. And it also meant that when like, I think it had more benefits than it had like difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really respect the fact that you made those difficult decisions in order to stay very true to your initial, you know, what it is you're trying to do with Rowan Bank, because I think it would be really easy to, because one of the other things what happened yesterday was the lead speaker, he works for, he heads up all these climate committees in education and stuff. And his son, for his 30th birthday, this guy said to him, what do you want for your 30th? And he said, I want you to go flight free, because you can't do the job you're doing and still fly all around the world doing your work. And he wasn't very happy about it, but he did make the commitment and he's now completely flight free. And I think it's really easy for people to do this sort of work and then just be like, oh yeah, but I can still do all of the things because I'm doing this thing. Mm. Like it cancels it out somehow. But so
yeah,
I really respect
an environmental,
you to that.
yeah, when I worked as an environmental consultant, there was definitely my second job as an environmental consultant was for a lovely company which I won't name and shame, but they had, yeah, it seemed like they had that philosophy on the flying, because I kind of campaigned to get a laptop so I could get, at that point not everybody had laptops, it was ages ago, but I could get the train between Edinburgh and Bristol and work on the train rather than fly. And they said that that was an inefficient use of time because I wouldn't be able to work properly on the train. I said, well, actually, I work really well on trains. And
yeah.
And I said, but and I can't justify doing this job and flying
internally
when there's a good train route. And they said that they thought that the impact we did as our job, like as part of our job, was greater than the impact of the flying. And I was like, well, that's irrelevant. We ought to be doing everything. We need to be doing a job that's really meaningful and having good impact. We also need to be a role model. And yes, that one flight, you know, when you actually look at, in terms of carbon literacy, when you look at the amount of carbon compared to like the global problem, it's very significant, but that's not the point.
No.
It's the message and being true. And I think it's really important. But we'll see how we do with trying to get to Mull. We haven't managed to find exactly the route that we can do. We might have to try and find if we can hire some electric bikes once we get there. It's very hilly. Very hilly. It's like we're going to a flat island.
Yeah, Mull.
Very hilly and very rainy.
Perfect Scotland. That is like, if you had to like sum up, especially the Highlands, if you had to, you know, or the Hebrides, that's, it's like, yeah.
Exactly. Especially. But I'm quite, what was really nice, it's for we're working with the National Trust.
Nice.
They have admired what we do and been like, you know, watched all our little films about positive imagines. And she was, when she wrote to me to kind of, you know, say they've got the funding, they want to bring us in, and great. She was like, I assume you're going to do it by bike, and you know, you're da, 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 da. And it was great because she assumed that. And I, because we've, that's been such a core part of our production, that you're then kind of like, you're like, well, yes, of course we're going to do that. Oh my God, how are we going to do that? But it's great that people, because that's what we've said we're going to do, then people assume we're going to do it. And then you kind of have to do it, even though we want to do it. But it's when it's really difficult, like taking a production to the woods on the Isle of Mull in autumn time. Like, it's great to have made that commitment as the core, the foundation of rather than it be an add-on. Well, if we can, we will.
Yeah.
Very easy to dip out, isn't it, and go, well, this once we're gonna
we'll make the exception,
yeah,
and then maybe they
maybe we'll look into it and have to make the exception, but at least that was kind of the last resort.
So I was going to ask about, because we've sort of talked about, you know, arts and the environment and the way that they can change things and communities and things, but I'd really love to know from your perspective, so how, because obviously you write all of the things that you do, you write the plays, you write the thing, how, and it would probably be very kind of pithy, I guess, of me to say, you know, where do you get your inspiration from, because I'm assuming it would be nature, but when you sort of start like have a glimmer of an idea, how is it you then build it into this story and this product, the production? What's the kind of creative process behind that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. So the creative process varies depending on the production. So for our Magical Woodland Walks and our Forest Circus, we have a variety of characters. Like sometimes our shows are really big productions, we have like 8 or 10 performers, but typically we'll have about 4, and we'll bring in people to work with us. We have a team of amazing and very talented freelance performers and workshop facilitators and environmental educators and kind of theatre people. So we'll bring in a team and we'll carefully pick our team, and we normally co-create the show.
Nice.
So we will, it will depend on who our client is. So if it's the Woodland Trust and they're bringing us in to work in a community in West Lothian, and they've got a particular message that they'd like to communicate, then we'll use that as our kind of foundation. Like, this is the message. And normally it's very simple. It's about you know, the woods and taking care of it and the history of the forest and the species that live there. And then we will co-create it. So if we have a team of four performers, we'll write the show based around a very simple storyline of we're there to celebrate summer or we're there to celebrate winter. And the storyline doesn't have to be very complicated then, mm-hmm. because we're going on a walk and we have to get from A to B in order to have the summer celebration or the winter celebration. And along the way, normally something happens to interrupt us being able to get to the summer celebration. And that's a bit of a like, what do we do? And we need the audience help, because it's always good to have a little bit of a moment where you might not get to where you want to be. And then we get there in the end with the help of the audience solving that problem. And normally, like, through that, you've learned about all the species that live in the woods and the season and why it's important to celebrate it, as well as a bit about each character and why they're. So our characters are from the forest, where like the children often ask, like, where do you live? Do you live in the trees? And so I think that we, and then they are you fairies? No, I'm, you know, whatever your character name is. And the idea is that you're not a fairy, you're not a human, you're not a tree, you're just another species that lives in the forest. And that's quite special for the children, because then they can't put us in a box. Kind of there and part of it. So that's a big part of the story, is each character's connection. And often, like, so I'm an aerialist, so I'll be up in the trees, so my connection is often with the flying creatures of the forest. Whereas we have another character who's Granny Lichenleaf, who's the wise old medicine woman of the woods, and she's, you know, hundreds of years old as the oldest oak tree, and she knows all about the plants and animals, and it's very connected, like, to the mycelium networks, and she talks a lot about the kind of medicinal qualities, and also she's a forager, so she collects food and often makes a potion, which is the tea that we drink as part of the celebration.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, that's another character. And then we have, you know, our stilt walking musician, Azan Shupad, and he's a tree hopper, a bit like a grasshopper but bigger. And so we, yeah, the characters are linked to all the different species in the forest, which is very nice part of it. For Positive Imaginings, which is our climate circus, our cycling climate circus, the show was developed, like I mentioned before, with the children that we were working with. So we worked with some primary school classes over a 6-week period in the woods, running workshops, and we wanted to collect what was important to the children, why they were connected to the local woodland, and what they thought was important in terms of what we should do about the climate crisis, but also much more locally, what we should do about taking care of their local forest and park. And then we had a theatre director take all the children's positive imaginings that we'd collected, work with the different performers and the characters and their skill sets. We had musicians and we had aerialists and we had storytellers, and create a play out of that. So that was a really collaborative approach with the children, with their teachers, because we also wanted to know what was important for the teachers and what, because they work with the children longer term, what they thought was important for the children as well. And then what our characters could bring to it. And then a storyline came out of that was much more complex. So it was about climate anxiety, which is obviously hugely complex, and how that can affect a person's ability to cope in life, but also to take climate action. And how we need, like, not just kind of, you know, a reduction of this many kilograms of carbon dioxide, we actually need a complete transformation about the way we live and how you can change perspective. So yeah, I think our making process is quite unusual because it's very collaborative and we work as a group. So often in theatre, you'll have a theatre director and a writer, and it will be their kind of, that it's up to them, and then they'll bring in the actors to work with their storyline, whereas we work very collectively to create storylines and to put it together. And I think that's what we need to do to address the climate crisis. So I quite like that our shows are kind of a collective creation.
Yeah, and it sounds like, because I'm kind of working a lot with, like, folk tales at the moment, and it sounds like, you know, a lot of what you're doing sounds very like they could be inspired by or taken from folktales, but it's almost like you're giving the children and the community folktales of their own. Because I think sometimes, you know, these kind of traditional stories, they're really wonderful and we can all take stuff from them. I think it's so important now to start creating those almost from scratch.
Mm,
to reflect the really, world we're in.
That's an interesting way to look at it, because we've read a lot of, you know, folk tales, and I mean, you know, we were all brought up maybe with those stories, but there's amazing, you know, I'm not from Scotland, but there's amazing Scottish folk tales.
Yeah.
And some of them have been a source of inspiration for our shows. Like, I'm thinking of one show that we did for the Scottish Wildlife Trust a couple of years ago, and it's an old tale, Scottish folk tale. I think it's probably like from the Nordics originally. It's about, you know, this creature that comes and destroys the land, and they wanted us to take that tale and turn it into a kind of a tale that would work for their local community in Cumbernauld, and it be about the climate crisis. So yeah, it's amazing taking existing stories and going, okay, how can we rework it for this community at this time about the problems of society of today?
So
I mean, often we're working, we do a lot of work with organisations that don't have big budgets. So we don't have the privilege of huge amounts of rehearsal and preparation time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these storylines that we know. Positive Imaginings was an exception. We got lots of development funding. We spent a long time developing and rehearsing that show to create a show about climate change. So that was the exception. But our other shows that are kind of seasonal celebrations and magical woodland walks, often they have very small budgets, and we're there and we can maybe rehearse for one day or one morning before we do the show. So it's about having a very simple storyline that's fun and exciting, but very simple.
Yeah.
That we can go and we can also adapt. So we're in one forest one day and then we'll be in a completely different place another day, and we're adapting the show to work in another forest that looks very different from the one we were in yesterday. So it's quite important that it's relatively simple for that reason. Mm-hmm.
And do you reuse your costumes and like rework them? And that's so cool.
So all our you'll see if you watch the little Positive Imaginings documentary, which is only 9 minutes long. It's like a mini documentary. We talk about how we reuse the costumes. But yeah, we've got an amazing costume designer. She's called Christine Banks. If anyone needs an amazing costume designer, we also have a costume maker that is a student at the Edinburgh College of Art.
Wow.
And we, our costumes, some of them have been going for like 10 years.
They're
amazing. Like, she makes them like to be really hardy and really long lasting, and also warm, because we perform a lot in winter in Scotland. And the basis of the costumes that she makes are often repurposed, like jackets that she buys in charity shops, that like tweed jackets that then can be like made into these amazing costumes. So yeah, our website has a character page, and you can check out all our beautiful costumes. But the idea is that they kind of can be adapted and used for all our productions. So we're not making new costumes for each show, even though I love a new costume.
Sometimes I guess it could be like a new old old costume, or an old new costume, like if you've reworked it. And
yeah, we are getting a new old costume made at the moment for it. I really want to, a crow features in lots of our stories because there's always a crow in a forest, so it's nice to have a character that's in the forest but that's not one of us.
Yeah.
So we often talk about the crow, and there's lots of legends about crows as well. And then always when we talk about the crow in the forest, there it is, it appears. It knows its cues. But yeah, we are developing a crow costume at the moment, which will be ready for autumn, for Halloween time, which I'm very excited about. But again, it's based on a jacket that I've had for years, and that will be the foundation of the costume.
Amazing. So I've got a couple of questions that I ask to everybody before we finish. So the first one is, picking any version of your younger self, I won't dictate an age, if you could give that younger version of yourself any advice, what would it be?
To go to circus school?
Yeah.
Yeah, I look at, because I teach aerial as a kind of like little extra I teach trapeze and rope and silks. And that, you know, some of these amazing young aerialists get to go to circus school at their university or their college. And the idea of being able to do that as my younger self for a few years would have been incredible. I'm sure it would have been very, very hard. But I always, you know, my younger self thought I had to kind of do everything then and kind of establish, you know, this very successful career really young and this company that did everything, and actually just to be able to take my time a bit more and not feel like I had to do everything very quickly.
I can really relate to that. I can really relate to that.
Yeah, and being able to kind of, I mean, it's a huge privilege to be able to go off to circus school for 2 or 3 years, but being able to kind of have the faith that you have this whole, you know, we live a long time now in general. You know, 2 or 3 years is nothing, and that's probably really worthwhile doing. To have kind of, what else would I tell my younger self? Yeah, to slow down, to spend more time in the woods, going for walks, because I think, yeah, so often we're so rushed, and actually I think the best ideas come to me actually when I'm cycling. And I try to cycle kind of everywhere. That is my preferred. I actually do like cycling, so it's my preferred way to get around Edinburgh. But often these long cycle rides kind of allow you time to think, and just to make sure you create that space, that downtime space, because I think that's where the most creative, interesting ideas come in. When you're really busy, they have no space to come.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And also, go on, sorry.
And to do more kind of, to have a more collaborative approach. I think we were all set up, and I think this is probably still the case in school, unfortunately, to be in competition with each other.
Yeah.
To work more collaboratively, to share skills. And I think, you know, we're now in a fortunate enough position in our organisation where we can bring in all these different, really interesting, really talented people and work collaboratively. But maybe when I was younger, I worked much more individualistically and tried to do everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
Working collaboratively and having interesting conversations like this and going, oh, the people are doing amazing stuff. And but yeah, I'm very fortunate. I've just been awarded a Churchill Fellowship.
Congratulations.
Thank you. To research climate communication and education from people doing amazing things all over the world. So like the idea is to collect this, you know, to go and visit best practice elsewhere and to share knowledge and to bring back that learning to my work in the UK. So I'm really excited because that's very much like seeing what other people do, what different approaches there are, and being able to maybe integrate some of those different ways of doing things into our work.
That's so exciting.
So yeah, because I feel like you can easily burn out working in this, because it is, you know, the topic is very difficult and it's very depressing and it's very sad, especially when you have children and you work with children.
You're
just like, we're so compromising their future, and it's devastating, and it can feel like you're very powerless and that your impact is so small. But I think by collaborating, that's where we can be very powerful. So I'm really excited to go and visit these amazing, like, I'm going to visit Acting for Climate in Norway, who are another circus company, but who are addressing this issue through their art. And I'm so excited. I'm just using them as an example to see what their creation process is and how they go about addressing this issue through their work and how they keep going, how they don't burn out, and how they arrive in a woodland and then make a show work for that community. And then I'm also visiting some schools that have amazing environmental education programs as their core, rather than as an adult.
Yeah.
So I'm really interested in how climate education can be more cross-curricular rather than subject specifics, and not just in the STEM subject schools like in Finland that are approaching it as a project-based thing, and not as a subject, that it's integral to everything a school teaches, because it's our kind of, it's our blood really, isn't it, if we don't.
I feel like that's the sort of thing a lot of people in education need to do, especially in terms of best practice, because I know that is what they're trying to do, is embed climate literacy, or, you know, yeah, climate literacy into all of the subjects. I don't know why there's such a block well, how do we do that? It's like, well, it's obvious.
The idea with my thing is to talk to people working in policy and education, as well as the people on the ground working in education, to see how I can then come back and hopefully influence the UK education policy and
amazing
work at a strategic level. So yeah, watch this space.
If that's incredible.
Any of your listeners have any contacts around the world working in this area, I'm very keen to and to talk to people and to just find out as much as I can, and then to share that knowledge and hopefully make a bit of a difference to how we approach this subject.
Yeah, it's also amazing. I should imagine it will feel quite connecting, that, you know, sometimes you can kind of feel like you're working in a bubble, but, you know, that you're the only one doing this stuff, and even though you know you're not, it's, you know, when you're not connected with those people, it can feel quite isolating. I mean, that's how I sometimes feel.
No, I definitely feel like that a lot. And I'm intuitive. I just know that we need a different approach, that we're not approaching this always in the right way. And, you know, we're compartmentalizing climate and teaching about it and trying to inspire kind of people to become climate citizens and take climate action, but in a way that doesn't go across every aspect of life. And I think if we don't address this issue across every aspect of life, then we can only ever like tackle one little bit of it, and actually you need to look at it as much more holistically, I think.
Definitely. So my last question before we kind of wrap up and you tell us about all the amazing ways we can find you, is there anything you're working on right now, anything that you're looking forward to that's coming up? You've maybe answered that question, but is there anything that you're working on right now, or anything you're looking
for? So I've just been awarded a Churchill Fellowship, so I'm going to spend the next year researching creative approaches to climate communication and education around the world. And the idea is to bring back that knowledge, that best practice from elsewhere, and integrate it to our work in the UK. So I suppose that's what I'm working on, and that's my focus. And that's, I think it will really influence the work that we do and create. We have got a series of really nice shows in local forests all through summer and autumn coming up. So if you're in or around Edinburgh, you can check out what we're doing. We're hoping to tour Positive Imaginings. So we're, like I mentioned, we're going to take it to Mull in autumn time, but we're also looking at getting funding so we can take Positive Imaginings to some of the schools that really need it and want it most. We're developing a session for NatureScot staff. So NatureScot is the big government agency in Scotland. Can't remember what the equivalent is in England.
Probably Natural England, I should think.
So we're developing this session for NatureScot staff about climate anxiety in the workplace and how you can take a more collective approach and feel less alone. So that's a really interesting new thing. We've done a lot of team building sessions for organisations, taking, you know, teams of staff into the woods and having a really nice time. Yeah. And that's a connection, but it's basically forest school for adults.
Nice.
And our team building sessions are really, really popular. So it's taking that approach and working outside and in the woods, but specifically looking at climate change and climate anxiety, and how you can work more as a team rather than as an individual, like an eco champion. You know, I think lots of organisations have like an eco champion in their office, and that's a very lonely place to be, and it's not very effective. So yeah, it's taking a different approach to that. So that's our new focus for our team building, which I'm really excited about, actually. So that will be trialled in September and then ready for other organisations to bring us in to... Not into an office, out into the woods.
Yeah, definitely. Nice. Cool. So before we finish, where can people find you, your work, upcoming dates and things like that?
Okay, yeah, we have a website, rowanbank.org.uk. So, and via our website, you can click onto all our social media. So we're on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. On our website, We have different pages, so you can click onto the Positive Imaginings page, which is our climate circus, and watch a little show reel that's 2 minutes long. If you're more interested, you can watch the 9-minute mini documentary. On our forest circus page, we again have a little film of what our promenade walks through woods, our seasonal celebrations look like. We've got loads of photos. But the best way to kind of check out what we're doing like at the moment is probably via our social media channels. We have a news page on our website as well.
Thank you so much for this chat. I really appreciate your time, and I'm so glad we got to like reschedule and reschedule and reschedule.
No worries. I'm glad we did too.